Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the ships at sea. This is the American Brand Radio Initiative. I'm your host, James Bostic. Good to be here with you. Well, let me be perfectly honest with you guys. I don't have any idea what I'm going to talk about tonight. There are a lot of things happening, and I've kind of been shuffling through bookmarks and looking at things. And seeing what we're going to talk about. I guess really there are a couple of big stories. The biggest one, and we'll take it in that order, according to Matthew Vadim from frontpagemag.com, which is one of my go-to sources, and I encourage you guys to check them out as well. The Democrats' politically risky scheme to hold the United States government operations hostage to their demand that young illegal aliens be granted amnesty failed spectacularly yesterday, as lawmakers voted to reopen the briefly shuttered government. Just 69 hours into the shutdown, most of the time passed over the weekend when few Americans even noticed the government was closed, Democrats and other open borders lawmakers staged a tactical retreat, handing President Trump and anti-amnesty conservatives a clear victory. Democrats no doubt aware of the Harvard-Harris poll that found that 58% of voters were opposed to a Democrat-led shutdown. Now, these things are pretty telling, especially – I'm not exactly sure how telling, but it is another one of these things that I see that I find I think will bode ill for the Democrat Party in the long term. Democrats essentially got nothing in exchange for voting to reopen the government, which made the Republican triumph even sweeter. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made an unenforceable promise to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to bring an immigration bill to the floor. He said merely that it was his intention to do so. If a compromise can't be made regarding the illegals before the government funding runs out again. Britt Hume, Fox News commentator emeritus, said, "I doubted it was possible, but Democrats have actually lost a shutdown fight. Schumer has agreed to end the filibuster in exchange for practically nothing. Make no mistake, Schumer and the Democrats caved. What a political fiasco." Charles Chamberlain, executive director of a left-wing group called Democracy for America, really handed it to the Democrats hard for backing down on this particular fight. He said that today's cave by some Senate Democrats was not only a stunning display of moral and political cowardice, it was a strategically incoherent move that demonstrates precisely why so many believe the Democrat Party doesn't stand for anything. If you want to know why we lost in 2016 and why a Democratic wave in 18 is far from guaranteed, despite the deep level of disgust for Donald Trump, which I gotta take exception to that, maybe from the left there is, you don't have to look any further than this weak and profoundly disappointing cave from Senate Democrats. It was the Democrats' single-minded obsession with securing amnesty for around 700,000 individuals who sought relief under the constitutionally suspect Obama-era DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, that led to the shutdown of the federal government 12:01 a.m. Saturday for the first time in the Trump era. Trump said in September he planned to end DACA and gave Congress 6 months to find a legislative fix. I'm pleased that Democrats in Congress have come to their senses and are now willing to fund our great military, border patrol, first responders, and insurance for vulnerable children, said the president in a Monday afternoon press release. As I have always said, he continued, once the government is funded, my administration will work towards solving the problem of very unfair illegal immigration. We'll make a long-term deal on immigration if and only if it's good for the country. At 6:10 p.m. last night, the House of Representatives voted 266 to 150 to give final congressional approval for House Rule 195, which provided the stopgap funding for the federal Leviathan. And this will keep the government on the move and fed till February 8th. And what it does is it clears the way for federal employees who were furloughed to come back to work. So everybody's back at work now. The president signed it into law hours later. And there you have it. The government's back in business. It covers CHIP, the stopgap legislation, covers the Clinton-era children's health insurance program. So you have money for that. That's taken care of. So the kids aren't going to have any problems getting their health care. Medicare has been taken care of. Everything is okay. More importantly, the military back on the payroll. I always hate that. And this is the thing where it's going to hurt the Democrats. And how that's going to hurt the Democrats is because they are now going to be painted, number one, as placing the welfare of illegal aliens over the legitimate function of our government for legitimate citizens. They shut down the federal government in the name of illegal aliens. They held up paychecks for the United States military in the name of illegal aliens. Now, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. What does that tell you about Democrat leadership? What does that also tell you further about the rank and file? The guys marching in lockstep. Well, it says a little bit good about them, too, because you see, the shutdown didn't last as long as it did because Democrats changed their votes. Democrats decided to vote for the continuing resolution. I'm imagining, and this is just speculation on my part, it'd be great if Dr. Brainiac Kesterson were here, but he's on a well-deserved leave. I would imagine over the last couple of weeks, as this has come down to a vote, and the informed voters who are, since being informed, paying attention, and they've probably called some of these guys, and they probably put some heat on them. I can't think of any other reason why they would wish to, you know, to change their vote. And that's what they did. Some of them had to in order to fund this continuing resolution, to pass this continuing resolution. This is a strong signal, again, of the infighting and the implosion of the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party these days is all about the politics of identity. You got Black Lives Matter. You've got La Raza. You've got they've got some kind of new name now that's like more letters than are even actually in the alphabet, but the LBGTQ, MSNBC people, it's all identity. It's all, you're a certain class of individual, certain demographic. And because you're that certain demographic, you're entitled to certain benefits, or at least that's the thinking. And so in order to establish a power base, Democrats foolishly cater to that politics of identity type crowd. And they make these promises. And they tell these people that they have a forum and that they count because of whatever it is that makes them, whatever it is they imagine makes them unique. Case in point, let me find it. Luis Gutierrez was really mad over this thing because he said that he felt like there, and Gutierrez, he's a DACA guy, he's an amnesty guy, he was mad at the Democratic leadership because it seemed to him, get this, that more attention was being paid to the same-sex marriage crowd than was being paid to the illegal alien crowd. Who has the priority? See, this is what happens when you get with these politics of identity types, and they want to foment division. Now, this is something that the Democrat Party is going to have to deal with. Gutierrez is mad. He has a voice amongst Latinos in the party. They're going to have to do something to shut him up, to placate him. What will that be? I don't know. But whatever it is they're doing, you know, in this divisive ideology that they have, they rob from Peter to pay Paul. So they'll do something. They'll give concessions to the Latino section of their vote, and it's going to make the LBGT people mad, or it's going to make the Black Lives Matter people mad, and they're feeding on each other, and they're going to continue to feed on each other. That's just one problem. Now, you have Thomas Perez, who is a huge amnesty guy, who's head of the Democrat National Committee. You also have Keith Ellison, who once upon a time signed his name Keith Ellison X because he is Muslim, and he has strong ties to CARE, who has strong ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. You get the idea. Not dead air. I'm trying to think about what I'm going to say next. I told you I really didn't have a whole lot of guidance about what I was going to do tonight. But this is significant. And what we're going to see, I think, is a continuation of this. So within the Democrat National Committee, you've got a Muslim who has strong ties to Muslim Islamic terrorism. You have the chairman himself who has ties to La Raza, and is an illegal alien amnesty guy. And then this is the leadership. These are the people that are the most talked about. These problems are compounded. They're not raising any money. They talk about the gains that they've made in donations here lately with the collusion fall draw, the Mueller investigation. And I have a terrific clip I'm going to set up here in just a little bit once I figure out a way to get out of this tar baby I'm wrapped up in. Now, hold on a second. All this talking makes a man thirsty. Now, here's the thing. In 2020, who among the Democrat leadership that's around now, and there may be some dark horse, there may be some upstart maverick type, the Barack Obama type that comes out of nowhere and winds up getting, you know, seriously considered for the Democrat nomination in 2020. But these are the three most talked about 2020 contenders, and they are Senator Bernie Sanders, 77 years old. Senator Elizabeth Warren, 68, maybe 69 by now. And Uncle Joe, former Vice President Joe Biden, 74 years old. And if we stop and take it into consideration, Hillary Clinton, who is now 70, could probably be thrown in there because, you know, she has not ruled out by any stretch of the imagination another run in 2020, in which case she'd be about 74 years old. You know what comes to mind when I think about some of this stuff and these geezers that are in Washington, not just on the Democrat side, but on the Republican side as well. You know, John McCain's like 104 years old, and they cut out part of his damn brain, and he's still going around up there voting. All right? I mean, come on now. Seriously, they did. They did cut out some of his brain because of that tumor, and he is really going around voting with less brains than he had, you know, before the surgery. Because they cut out some of it, and he's voting. But anyway, so you got John McCain, you got all these guys, and it reminds me of what you used to see these like May Day parades or these parades that they would have in Moscow back in the 60s and the 70s, and all those old guys like Brezhnev and Kosygin and Khrushchev and Andropov and all these dudes, they just all looked like they were propped up on the balcony. It looked like a wax museum out there. Disney's animatronics, and one of them would wave every now and then. They'd wheel them back inside and put them in their hyperbaric chambers. They're just these old people. And it's an old idea, which is, of course, socialism. And, you know, everywhere socialism has been tried, it fails, just like everywhere communism has been tried, it has failed. Oh, yeah? What about China? Well, yeah, China, but China's become a hybridized form of communism, which embraces a great deal more free market capitalism than a real communist country would. So they've kind of hybridized it. We don't count them. But they're on their way, I think, to some financial troubles. But that's for another time. We're not even going to get into that. Hell, I can barely remember what we're talking about now. So you have these septuagenarians. You have these old people that here in 2 years, it's 2018, here in a couple of years, they're going to trot these cats out. We're going to start seeing them at the end of 2018, 2019, and they're going to be on the campaign trail, and they're going to go to Iowa, and they're going to hang out with the farmers in the diners, and they're going to be wearing checked shirts, and they're going to be glad-handing and shucking and jiving and doing all that stuff to make them seem like they're men and women of the people, and we know they're not, but it's just part of the political theater. So those are the people that they have. I don't discount the threat of radical leftism wherever it exists, and believe me, it certainly exists in whatever this thing is now that's called the Democrat Party. But I think that this is significant because and you know what? Speaking of government shutdowns, let's do a little compare and contrast. While we're thinking about it, so you get the idea. The Democrat Party, the Democrat field, the leftist side of that ideology has some serious problems. They're dealing with some implosions. That doesn't mean that they're not dangerous. There's probably nothing more dangerous in the world than a wounded Cape buffalo or a silver-tipped grizzly. And that's how we got to look at this. But the wounds could be fatal. But we have to stand resolute. Now, government shutdowns. You guys remember the last one. Well, here's what's happened with this short-lived one. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke was seen quietly picking up trash at the National Mall and helping busloads of school children tour and understand the World War II monument in its vicinity, all in the wake of Friday's government shutdown led by Democrats in Congress. He's doing this without pay and as other employees are placed on furlough. According to Mr. Zinke, we're not putting up barricades. Absolutely not. We're passing out brochures, so we run out of brochures. I'll be out here every day. Now, this is an admirable response of a dedicated public servant. And among Republicans, he's really not the only one. There were a number of Republicans in Congress, along with one Democrat, which I'm thinking was probably Joe Manchin. Keep your eye on him. I'm from West Virginia. Anyway, these folks insisted on going without paychecks until the government shutdown was squared away. And I think that that's, even though in this case it's symbolic and for the most part, none of these guys, they could be up there doing all that for free. So, again, we're dealing with theater, a lot of theater. But it's positive. It's a good thing. Now, when you think about this, how different was this government shutdown, albeit it was kind of short, compared to the one in 2013 during the Obama years when Obama officials were the people calling the shots, rammed it right into the public's face to make sure that voters bore the brunt of the pain. They wanted the public to suffer. They shut down national parks. They placed barriers on the World War II monument, the same one that Mr. Zinke's leaving tours on. They refused to allow old veterans who had traveled across the country their chance to see the monument that their great heroism merited. They did a lot of other disgusting things too. They forcibly and at very high cost, what they did is during that shutdown, they shut down private businesses on national park land. Effectively expropriating their earnings, once again, to drive a point home that the shutdown was bad and that Republicans were to blame. They politicized the shutdown too, keeping hot towels for themselves at the gym while fining joggers who ran through national parks. The mall, of course, shut down except for an illegal alien rally. So the Obama administration fundamentally held the public hostage in a bid to get them to blame Republicans and advance their own political ends, lulling in their comforts. Republicans, by contrast, are now working together to alleviate the inconvenience to the public and minimize the pain to the most vulnerable. Democrats sought to step up that pain, commissar style. The Republicans are now seeking to soften it. As midterm elections are coming up, it calls attention, really, to who is fit to govern in the United States legislature. You take a look at these shutdowns side by side, and you can legitimately ask who really cares about the public. Well, I'll tell you what, we're down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm a little dry. So we're going to have a brief musical interlude, and then we'll be back. I've got a pretty decent clip from Sean Hannity. We're going to talk a little bit about the Mueller investigation and that memo that Devin Nunes, chairman of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, gave last week to Congress. But in the meantime, I'm going to yammer here just a little bit and try and find something to play. And I don't know what that's going to be. I think, here we go. Back with more of the American Brand Radio Initiative right after this. We'll be right back. happening again. Okay. All right. Well, I got to shut this off.
Hold on, dude.
Okay, with the backup mic, James Bostic here, the American Brand Radio Initiative. One mic dies, another one takes its place. And I don't know what else to tell you about that. What I was going to talk to you about, can anybody hear me? Can they hear me? Are they hearing me? All right. So anyway, we're dead. Some of okay. Hey, can you hear me now? We're going to assume that you can. All right, we're going to hope that you can. And here's what's going on. One of the mics died. We got another one online here real quick. I have a clip set up. And this clip, I've been meaning to play it for a couple of weeks. And it has to do a great deal with the weed patch that America knows as the Robert Mueller investigation into Trump-Russia collusion. This is, like, again, I'm really, really sorry about this. It's a long clip. And I try not to do this, number one, because I've always thought kind of like early on that it was kind of lazy because it takes up a lot of space. But at the same time, rather than me paraphrase, it gives you the opportunity to hear them in their own words. So I've got this pulled up. Again, it's about 12 minutes. I apologize for the length, but it's worth the listening to because on a lot of this stuff, if we're going to be informed about it, if we're going to really be informed, we got to get in the weeds and we got to sort it out. And they kind of bank on us not going into the weeds and figuring out. Sean's done a lot of the work for us. He did a really good job on this, and I think we ought to hear the man out. Sean Hannity.
All right, tonight, just like we did with Hillary Clinton's giant web of corruption, we are going to actually show you with charts just how corrupt, abusively biased, and political special counsel Robert Mueller and his team of so-called investigators really are. This is, on the surface, complicated. Stay with us tonight. We're going to set the stage. We will explain and break down everything for you. Let's start with the head of the snake. That would be the special counsel, Robert Mueller. Mueller's credibility is in the gutter tonight with these new discoveries. His conflicts of interest, his clear bias, the corruption are on full display. Mueller is frankly a disgrace to the American justice system and has put the country now on the brink of becoming a banana republic. Here's why. Robert Mueller, former FBI director under Bush and Obama, was first appointed as a special counsel to the Russia probe by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Rosenstein, longtime federal attorney, was only able to appoint Mueller because the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, you remember, recused himself from the Russia investigation. That was a huge mistake. By the way, he may want to unrecuse himself. Now, you might remember this came after Sessions and Rosenstein encouraged President Trump to fire then FBI Director James Comey over his inappropriate actions in the 2016 Clinton email investigation. Well, as it turns out, James Comey, guess what? He's very good friends with Robert Mueller. After years of working in similar roles, well, some have even described the duo as, quote, brothers in arms. Isn't that so cute? Now, Comey also tweeting tonight, he is meeting with his book publisher. Oh, I can't wait for that to come out. When's he going to start working for fake news CNN or conspiracy theory TV MSNBC? We'll have more on that later. But back to Mueller. His conflicts of interest do not end here. While serving as the FBI director in the Obama administration, Mueller stood by and did nothing while the controversial sale of uranium was approved by Hillary Clinton and others in 2010 to that state-owned Russian energy company. Now, keep in mind, a year and a half before, the FBI had serious evidence of Russian bribery linked to the Uranium One sale, and a confidential informant was providing them further proof for 6 years of a potentially illicit deal. 20% of America's uranium was at stake. We don't have enough uranium. Another important Mueller conflict. It stems from President Trump. Remember, he reportedly interviewed Mueller to be Comey's replacement as the head of the FBI? And ultimately, President Trump, he went in another direction. He gave the job to Christopher Wray. And finally, one of the biggest examples of Mueller's faulty, clouded, biased, abusively biased judgment is who he chose to staff the Russian probe. Now get this. At least 8 of the 16 lawyers that Mueller appointed to his team donated to Democrats like Obama and Clinton, including thousands of dollars to these campaigns. Not a single attorney Mueller appointed or hired donated to the Trump campaign or any other Republican presidential campaign. Which brings us to our next chart, where we expose members of Mueller's team from their clear political bias. One of Mueller's top lieutenants, who some have called a legal pit bull, is none other than Andrew Weissmann. We'll have more on him later in this monologue and show, but first, it's important to point out Weissmann gave $4,300 in political donations to Democrats, including Obama. And as you can see, we filled out the chart. All told, Mueller's corrupt band of Clinton lovers, they've been responsible for over $50,000 in donations to Democrats. We're really supposed to believe that they're fair and they're unbiased in this investigation? Next up, former top FBI counterintelligence official Peter Strzok, as we're about to show you, as we told you about last night, his tentacles touch just about everything. Now, there's more stunning new information about Strzok tonight. We'll get to that in a second. But first, let's lay the foundation. According to a report, this was yesterday, Strzok is a member of Mueller's special counsel team that signed the document that officially started the entire Russian investigation witch hunt. We learned yesterday this Trump-hating, Clinton-loving agent oversaw the FBI interviews of our former National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, where he supposedly lied. Sarah Carter, who'll join us in a little bit, is reporting that Strzok personally interrogated Flynn himself. And Fox News also learned that it was Strzok that was fired by Mueller over the summer for sending the anti-Trump, pro-Clinton text messages to his FBI lawyer girlfriend. Well, we just discovered tonight that Strzok's girlfriend, Lisa Page, also was on Mueller's team before leaving. We didn't know that yesterday. And from there, it gets even more shocking, as our own Catherine Herridge is reporting. Strzok played a very key role in the Clinton email server investigation. Now, this politicized FBI official even participated in the July 2nd, 2016 interview of then-former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, where conveniently she was not put under oath. Now, this part is brand new tonight. Strzok was also present at FBI interviews of Clinton's top aides, Uma Abedin, Cheryl Mills, where they claim they only knew about the server after Clinton left the State Department and it became public. He loves the Clintons and everybody around them. And it turns out emails from 2010 and 11 show that both Abedin and Mills did in fact know about the server. So either they misled the FBI or flat out lied. Where are the charges against them? And why were they spared? And Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, why was he charged with lying to the FBI? A massive double standard. And it gets worse from there. Fox News has confirmed that Strzok changed the language. He was the guy in James Comey's draft memo exonerating Hillary Clinton from grossly negligent behavior to extreme carelessness. That's letting Hillary Clinton off the hook. Remember, they wrote the exoneration before the investigation. That means the fix was in. Gross negligence is part of the legal standard that would mean Clinton broke the law. They stood up for her. They defended her. They protected her. This is shocking, and this is why the Office of Inspector General is now reviewing Peter Strzok's role in the Clinton email server investigation. Now, Strzok's involvement extends to other key areas of this Russian probe. Keep up with me here. There's a lot of information, like the anti-Trump, fake news, Russian propaganda dossier that used current and former Russian government sources to try and smear then-candidate Trump with salacious lies and influence the election and mislead you, the American people. And a source is now revealing to Fox News that Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe, he's the key witness that Congress wants to talk to about the anti-Trump dossier. McCabe was scheduled to appear before Congress Thursday, but now is saying he's not going to show up. Now, McCabe is also thought to have been the key point of contact to the former British spy, Christopher Steele. He's the guy that created the fake news anti-Trump dossier that was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC that Donna Brazile says she was running. And we can't forget, according to multiple reports, a political action committee with ties to key Clinton ally, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, they're like best friends. Well, they gave $500,000 to Andrew McCabe's wife, Jill. She was running for the Virginia State Senate race. Now, Virginia's Democratic Party also contributed over $200,000 to Jill McCabe. Wow, the connections are stunning. And finally, House investigators, they believe that Strzok is the key figure in the Pfizer surveillance of a Trump associate on the campaign. Now, that makes a lot of sense given FBI agents' background in counterintelligence. And also tonight, and finally tonight, there's Robert Mueller's top deputy. Pay close attention. This particular minion is known as Mueller's legal pit bull. We're talking about the hard-charging prosecutor, Andrew Weissman. He has a long history of using highly questionable, unethical tactics to get convictions. There's new information tonight, and it highlights Weissman's rampant anti-Trump bias. We'll get to that in a second. Before we do, you've got to understand, who is Andrew Weissman? Now, Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett has dug deep into Weissman's background. Here's what he has found. Back in 2000, during the massive Enron scandal, Weissman was one of the prosecutors on the task force that brought a very controversial obstruction of justice case against the giant accounting firm, Arthur Andersen. This is important. Weissman's actions put that company out of business. Tens of thousands of people lost their jobs. In 2005, the United States Supreme Court overturned Weissman's obstruction of justice conviction in a unanimous 9-0, nearly unprecedented ruling. But it was too late. He had already inflicted maximum damage to so many people. Arthur Andersen was not the only victim of Weissman's aggressive tactics. The conviction of a business transaction between Enron and the financial firm Merrill Lynch, well, that sent people to jail. But guess what? They were innocent. That decision was reversed by the Fifth Circuit, U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Weissman has also been accused of intimidating witnesses, making up crimes that don't exist, and in one case, withholding evidence that was exculpatory, that helped the defendant. And Weissman is also tied to that corrupt Uranium One deal and the Obama administration cover-up. Why did Mueller ever appoint this guy? He knew his track record. And back then, Weissman was in charge of the DOJ's fraud section during the Russian bribery scheme. And as Greg Jarrett points out, Weissman actually signed the bottom of the plea agreement from the Russian businessman involved in that case. Now, here's the new explosive information we have tonight. In an email released after a FOIA request by Judicial Watch, Weissman, the guy I'm telling you about, he told the former acting attorney general, Sally Yates, an Obama appointee, he was proud of her. What was he so proud of? Yates denied a direct order from the president. Her boss refused to defend the legal, constitutional travel ban back in January. Weissman's email reads, quote, "I am so proud. I am in awe. Thank you so much. All my deepest respects." Pretty unbelievable. Shows where his political bias is. Also tonight, your mainstream media, they're corrupt. They continue to spread fake news, all in an attempt to destroy and damage this president day in, day out, hour after hour, minute after minute. The latest example involves reports that a special counsel, as he issued a subpoena to Deutsche Bank for information about bank accounts that were held by President Trump and his family, Well, tonight we learn it's fake news. President Trump's lawyer, Jay Sekulow, he shot down this erroneous reporting with a statement that reads, quote, "We have confirmed that the news reports that the special counsel has subpoenaed financial records relating to the president are false. No subpoena has been issued or received. We have confirmed this with the bank and other sources. This is just another reason you, the American people, should never trust this destroy Trump corrupt media." And finally tonight, Robert Mueller's political witch hunt comes at a massive cost to all of us, the American taxpayers. Now, from May to the end of September alone, Mueller has spent nearly $7 million of your dollars on his corrupt, his crooked investigation that has now turned into this political fishing expedition. Remember, this all started as a probe into possible Trump-Russia collusion. There's been zero evidence so far, none, zero. It's been almost a year that this ever happened. And the media, Russia, Russia, Russia. So now Mueller and his political lackeys, they're trying to dig up any kind of potential wrongdoing to justify their existence. This is a massive waste of money, and you, the American people, are paying for all of this, which is an attempted political takedown of your duly elected president.
Okay. While I turn down the volume on my computer so we don't get the endless echo feedback. All right. If you listen, even if you just halfway listen to that, you can see the level, the deep level of intercourse that's going on between all these various factions. And Mueller's been a longtime Clinton guy. They gave money. Every lawyer on his team is at one time or another a former Clinton donor. This thing just goes. I mean, it's just this almost never-ending tapestry of intrigue and skullduggery and rhubarbism, and it just terrible things are afoot, people. And last week there was a memo that was written by Devin Nunes. And Devin Nunes is a Republican. I think he's California. Hold on a minute. I'll check on that. Well, wherever the hell he's from, he's the chairman of the House Select Committee on Intelligence. And he drafted a memo, a classified memo, which was presented to Congress. And within that memo are some pretty serious allegations concerning, in a nutshell, what we would consider to be the weaponizing of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, of the IRS, against Tea Party groups, of the Department of Justice. And what are we talking about when we say weaponize? Well, we're taking legitimate offices and mechanisms of our government, and we're turning them in to these offensive weapons to curtail the activities of an opposing political party. This is not how the FBI is supposed to work. This is not how the Department of Justice or the Internal Revenue Service are supposed to function. And we've got to root that out. Now, some of the other things, and I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks since the start of the new year. This same Devin Nunes got these specific forms. They're called FD-302 and FD-1023s. And what these forms are, they're documents that are the paper readout of interrogations. And in this particular case, it was when the FBI interrogated a man named Brian Steele. Brian Steele, former British intelligence agent, kind of iffy, shady character, who was representing a firm called GPS Fusion. GPS Fusion was hired by a law firm, one of the many law firms that handled business for the Democrat National Committee as well as the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. They call it opposition research. And it's not uncommon. Both sides do it. It's not necessarily dirty tricks, but you try to find things about your opponent that may cast him in such a light that he would be distasteful to the voters. So, Fusion GPS gets Brian Steele, who uses intermediaries, okay? He uses intermediaries to talk to people in Russia to set up this intelligence dossier, this unevidenced, this unverifiable, this nothing but blowing smoke up somebody's skirt dossier of hearsay, gossip, and sensational blather as legitimate research against Donald Trump and the Trump campaign. Well, it doesn't end there. When we talk about the weaponizing of the Department of Justice, we talk about the weaponizing of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, we're also talking about higher-ups in the Obama administration walking the higher corridors of power, using these facilities to enact FISA court wiretap warrants against the Trump campaign. In other words, taking this ridiculous, gossipy, he said, she said dossier of nothing and turning it into a national security risk that warranted the wiretapping of Trump Towers and the Trump campaign to see what they were doing. It wasn't because of any national security breach. It was in an attempt to fix the national election. It was in an attempt to swing the whole thing for Hillary Clinton, just like they did the Democrat nomination. And 63 million people had another idea. And those 63 million people were the people who voted for Donald Trump. They didn't vote for the Washington establishment on either side. They voted for this vision. They voted for an attempt to make this much-needed course correction. And things have been doing really well. Really well. I'm not going to get into it because we don't have a whole lot of time. And given the blog talk technical problems that we're having around here, I'm probably going to knock off a little bit early. But you see what's going on. The fix is in. Now, in addition to this memo that Devin Nunes sent to Congress, at some point this week, it was my understanding that the Office of Inspector General would be issuing their report concerning various interlapping issues concerning all this stuff here. It's awesome. It's terrible. It's so awful. You've heard me say this time and time again. You want to know what's going on in Washington, D.C.? Watch The Winter Soldier. Watch Captain America, the First Avenger. It's Hydra. It's this terrible monster. And every time you cut off one of the heads or you circumvent it, two more grow in its place. They talked about this, you know, the conspiracy theories of the deep state theory and all this. Okay, well, one of the best evidences of a conspiracy, say lawyers, is to look at its success. And up till now, these guys have been pretty successful. But things have happened. Things have changed. Things have come to the light that perhaps, once upon a time, might not have ordinarily had come to that light. And I give a lot of the credit to what's going on in alternative media. Guys like Don Newman, Donna Fiducia, the conservative cartel over at the Blaze Network, all the outstanding hosts at Talk America Radio and all the programming there. It's due, I think, in large measure because of the efforts of the – and Denise Simon. Let me tell you something about Denise Simon. I don't know if you know who she is or not. She's been a guest on my show. She's a wonderful woman. She does a show called The Sit Rep with Don Newman, and you can catch that on Talk America as well. She's outstanding, and if she tells you something or she says something – you can hang your hat on it. It's that solid. So you have all these people out here that are paying attention and looking, and so they make up this new alternative media. You don't need Fox News. You don't need CNBC, CSNBC, MSNBC, CNBC. You don't need any of the alphabets. You don't need them. They're archaic. They're outmoded. It's telecable. We're the internet, man. We're intergalactic. But you know what Kesterson would say? It's not enough to just sit here and listen and take comfort or get some joy from this one small victory. Okay, they cut off a head. Two more are going to go back in its place. What's it going to be? Is it going to be another challenge to immigration reform? Are they going to try something there again? Is it going to be some kind of thing in terms of homeland security or intelligence or FISA? Something. Constantly vigilant. Constantly. Because the price of peace is constant vigilance. So it's take heart. There are a lot of things to take heart. And I know tonight was kind of a weedy show, and we only had those two things to cover, and yeah, I guess we got through them okay. But Scott would say local action, and he's absolutely right. I look at the bigger picture. I look at the national stuff. But you know what? There are issues going on right here in my home county. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be out meeting and agitating and politicking Thursday night over some medical health tyranny that's going on with the state employees' health insurance here in the Mountain State. We're going to talk about that. I might even talk about that. That might be a good thing to talk about on Thursday because it'll still be fresh. I'll be fresh from the trenches. You know what? Listen, this is all the time we've had. I have bloviated long enough. I want to thank you very, very much for listening. I appreciate the time that, you know, we had to spend and talk about things and the interesting times that we live in. And this is about all for now. So what I'm going to do is say good night. God bless you guys, each and every one of you. We'll be back Thursday live, 7 p.m., and we'll be followed by Mark Hoffman right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network at the studios of Blog Talk Radio. And so now, having said all that, let me say this. Good night. God bless you guys. We'll see you Thursday at 7. Take care.